Today's show is brought to you in part by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment.
Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun for details.
In 2005, the Catholic Advocacy Coalition named New York City drag queen Mimi I'm First one of the top 10 anti-Catholic people because of her hilarious Christmas show, in which she portrays Jesus' mother Mary as a 2,000-year-old sassy diva. This resulted in over 600 people protesting her show in New York City's Times Square.
Today we're talking to one of the rising stars in the drag scene, Mimi I'm First. She's part of the web-based reality series, The Queens of Drag, New York City, and she'll be performing in Chicago at Haunted Halstead, our haunted house-style pub crawl through the heart of Boys Town. You don't want to miss it.
But it always hasn't been sunshine, lollipops, and crucifixes for Mimi. As a teenager, Brendan Chapman was left homeless by his homophobic family and forced to work the mean streets to survive.
Listen as Mimi shares her heartbreaking story of being a homeless teen and how she made it better.
What do New Yorkers make of the Islamic Community Center being built near Ground Zero?
GQ magazine declares men over 30 are hot and twinks are not.
And who is secretly having gay threesomes in Hollywood? Mimi provides the clues, you make the guesses. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Today's show is brought to you by generous support of fabulous listeners like you.
We really can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffun.com, and make a donation. Buy a t-shirt.
Your financial support makes all the difference.
Thank you.
Me.
Hello?
Is this Mimi I'm First?
Of course it is.
Who's on second?
many men waiting.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion. Welcome to the Feast of Fun, Mimi.
Hi, guys.
We are so excited to see you this Sunday. You're going to be part of Haunted Halstead, our haunted house style pub crawl through Boys Town, Chicago. And to really scare the good people of the world, we brought you in. Because you're scary talented.
I'm so excited I packed my head a lettuce mask just to scare people.
Oh, she's not that ugly.
No, just her wigs.
Interesting enough, we actually have our very own head of lettuce-inspired wig here in Chicago. And for Lady Gaga, we decided to recycle it and because it was really frightening.
Mm-hmm. It's just a big, giant green and white wig. And we used to, it's great to wear, especially photoshopping, because you can change the green to any color. So for years, people thought it was purple. And they're like, why doesn't she wear the purple wig? And I'm like, well, the purple wig doesn't really exist.
So Mimi, tell us about the origins of, because a lot of people, you're a rising star in the drag scene all over the world. And a lot of people are just getting to know you right now, but you're like being featured everywhere. You're in the Real Drag Queens of New York series.
The Drag Queens of New York City, yes. It's just the beginning of a project, but it's going to be really big. So that was just based on a pilot that we actually filmed a year ago. I think it's like a test series, so they're going to see what they're going to do with it.
So has it gotten the green light yet, or we don't know yet whether it's going to become
a
full-fledged
series? Because my episode hasn't aired yet.
Ah.
Hello.
When is yours going to air? It should be coming up very shortly, right?
Mine should be airing, I think a week from this upcoming week. So,
what are the origins of Mimi I'm First? How did your name come to be?
I knew that I wanted a drag name that evoked a pun, because I think that's sort of the essence of drag, is to have a name that's sort of funny. And I sort of believe that if you can make people laugh before they even see you on stage, you've done your job. So I made a long list of names that were all puns.
Oh.
And my good friend Portia, who's on the Wanda Sykes show, she said, if you don't pick, I gave her the list, and she said, if you don't pick Mimi I'm First, you're a fool. And I can't imagine myself being any of the other names that I had come up with.
What were some of the other names?
The runners-up were Heidi Schlong, Wilma Shitstink.
Oi.
Rhoda Dickin and Dinah Cancer.
Oh, I got to say, they're all fantastic names, though. But Mimi I'm First is really, it's really good.
Yes.
Why didn't you pick Dinah Cancer?
I thought that it wouldn't play in certain circles. You know, I do a lot of outreach to hospitals, so I thought that would cut my career short.
And you'd never get a gig at the Gilda Club. A Gilda's
never.
Club.
Never.
So you really go to hospitals like somebody's dying in their deathbed? Haven't they suffered enough?
I work for a company called Screaming Queens here in New York City, and we get sent around to weddings and bar mitzvahs and birthday parties. And so I have gone everywhere from hospitals to you know, bat mitzvahs. So I'm actually doing a bat mitzvah next week. So.
Oh, yes, Misunderstood is the New York City's drag queen answer to Don Corleone.
Yes, she is.
She's the Mayflower Madam of drag, in a way. Now, the first time you did drag was for Vacation Bible School, and you were 10 years old. What did you play?
It was for Vacation Bible School, which, for anyone who isn't familiar, it's a week-long summer camp for Christian kids. And the theme that year was Jesus Undercover. And so on this particular day, we had to get dressed up as undercover agents for Christ. And my mother dressed me and my 10-year-old, me and my brother, up as beauty queens, as like 60-year-old aging beauty queens. And and I went to church like that. So technically, the first time I ever did drag, it was for Jesus. And my brother is a dropout and a high school dropout and a mechanic. So it just goes to show that just because you do drag for Jesus when you're 10 doesn't mean you have to be an auto mechanic.
Well, that's great. I grew up Catholic, and the kids next door to us, they would go to Vacation Bible School. And they're like, we're going to Vacation Bible School. And to me, it sounded like the most awful thing in the world. I'm like, you go to like day camp and it's about the Bible? I was just like, that's crazy. Kids should be out playing, not studying the Bible.
It was fun. As I got older, it got more intense, because as you got older, you went to like different levels of Vacation Bible School. And when I remember being 15 or 16 and going to Vacation Bible School, and like I just had this like epiphany where I realized I was gay while away at Vacation Bible School, go figure. And like I just remember crying and crying and crying and crying, but I didn't want to tell anybody why I was upset. It was a very traumatic experience.
What went through your mind when you realized you were gay in Bible school? Like, were you thinking, I just love cock? Or, I mean, you're romantically attached to a boy?
I don't know what it was. It this weird emotion came upon me, and no pun intended. And, you know, I guess I realized I was gay. It sort of just clicked, you know? And I didn't think I really knew what it meant, but I knew. That was like my first memory of knowing that I was gay, and I think I buried it for a while after that. But I didn't quite have a label upon it. But it was such a weird experience. So my drag and my gay life are all circled around the church.
And yet, the Catholic Advocacy Coalition named you 2005's second most anti-Catholic person. Number 2 on their top 10 list.
In the entire world.
The entire world. Who is number 1? Who's the top? Who topped you? What?
All right. So what's interesting is who was number 3 and who was number 1. Number 3 that year was George Bush.
Wow.
He pissed them off. It had to do with like political things and like if you were with them or against them, and so I guess they viewed him as against them that year. Probably, you know, he had just made some decision or something that pissed them off. But number 1 was Dan Brown for the Da Vinci Code.
Oh.
Yeah, and so I was between Dan Brown and George Bush.
Now tell us why you got number 2.
I got number 2 because I have been working for the last 6 years on a theater piece that I've played everywhere from New York to San Francisco, where I play the Virgin Mary as a boozy lounge singer telling her side of the Christmas story.
Oh, my God.
It's very fun.
It's a family affair. It's called Mary Like a Virgin?
It's every year the show. What I do is I probably keep about 50% old material, and I incorporate 50% new material to like keep it topical, because the Virgin Mary talks about everything from giving birth to Christ to Sarah Palin. So you know, just depending on what's going on in the world, I change up the show. So the show always has a different title because it is a different show. So the first year, that was called Mary Like a Virgin. That was the year that we were protested.
And the following year?
The year after that, it was called A Very Merry Christmas. To the year after that, it was called Oh Holy Shit, It's Christmas. and it was a picture of me as the Virgin Mary with baby Jesus's dirty diaper.
Oh.
Now, you've been criticized by this, saying that you only picked a Christian symbol, but I was reading your notes here online, I guess, and you said that Mary technically covers all the Judeo-Christian religions, because it's a Jewish woman, celebrated by Christians, and mentioned more in the Quran than any other holy book. I had no idea.
Yeah, the Virgin Mary is a huge figure in the Quran. So what's funny to me is just that I always get death threats and shit when I do the show every year, but every year the common theme that I get is, oh, she wouldn't do this if it was about a Muslim, you know, religious figure. And I'm like, well, she kind of is mentioned more times in the Quran than the Bible, you know, and she was, essentially... You know, I mean, Jesus was a Jew. Like, people forget that, you know, like...
But do Jewish people acknowledge, like, Jesus the way Christians do?
No, not certainly not in the same way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was a Jewish woman, and she was a Jewish mother, you know? And so what was that like for her? So she's sort of what's great about this character is that she can play into all these different faiths. And, you know, when I do it, you know, I'm literally playing her as though she's 2,000 years old. You know, like, she still looks hot, but, you know, because her boyfriend's God, so she, of course, is going to always look perfect. But, you know, she has 2,000 years worth of experience. You know, she spent 2,000 years bouncing between weights, you know. So, you know, she says it's really hard to lose weight when you're at the Last Supper, and Jesus says, eat this bread for it is my body, and you have to turn them down because you're on the Atkins diet. So, but she confesses not only did she eat the bread at the Last Supper, but she took home leftovers.
Wow.
And she had Last Supper for days.
Oh, boy.
The show is really funny because it does stay true. It stays very true to the traditional Christian story. I don't change it. I could have very easily have gone off and said, oh, you know, as the Virgin Mary, when I found out I was pregnant when I was 13, it was really from the milkman next door, and I made the whole thing up. You know, and it's all a lie. But mm-hmm. I don't do that because I think that's like a cheap way out. It's more fun to say, you know, yeah, I was 13 and I was engaged to this man who was much older than me, you know, who had two kids of his own, who was a carpenter, you know, and I'm not happy about that. But
Joseph had kids?
What?
Joseph had kids?
Joseph had, in some versions of the Bible text, Joseph had other kids of his
own.
Do you
still at the end deliver that Christmas sappy message of hope and everything's going to be okay?
Well, in the end, what it's really about that her message is that it's about loving people as you would love yourself, because I do believe that's the common theme that's in whether you do read the Bible or the Quran or any other religious text. The message is all the same. Do unto others, you do unto you. And I think that's really the place that I try to come from. And to laugh at yourself and to have fun. You know, like everything's so serious in this world.
Do unto others as you would do unto you. Isn't that very masturbatory, though?
You know? I guess.
Today's podcast is brought to you by people just like you and by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 75,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like Feast of Fun. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today.
Books like The Guardian, a gay romance novel, written by Mary Colmes, narrated by Sean Christen. Now get what this book is about. It's about a man who falls in love with a werewolf.
Ooh.
Jude Shea's life is turned upside down when he rescues a dog named Joe. Even though Jude has enough trouble taking care of himself, He doesn't even have a job. He can't resist the animal that needs him. Then one night, a man shows up on his doorstep looking to claim Jude's new companion. As they run from a surprise attack, Jude finds out that Joe is not what he seems. Find out more about it on audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun.
Again, go to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun for your free audiobook.
All right, so you're still doing passion plays as an adult.
I mean, I am. I
you never
am.
Stopped.
No, I'm fascinated by religion. So
I want you to explain this to me. It's like, you know, you've heard all about this, like Ground 9/11 Community Center that's being built, a mosque near 9/11. But why don't New Yorkers just shut up this argument by pointing out there's already a mosque, a titty bar, a Korean dry cleaners, and a Dunkin' Donuts, a Taco Bell, all nearer the neighborhood where the World Trade Towers used to be.
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny is that I find that the people who are making the most noise about this issue don't actually live in New York. You know, that it's the Fred Phelps and the people in the Bible Belt who are like causing the big fuss. And I think New Yorkers are maybe a bit more open-minded. You know,
but why doesn't anyone point out there already is a mosque there? I mean, it's like this
is
a community center.
People are pointing that out, but the problem is that the people on the right like to yell a little bit louder than everyone else. And I think that the people on the left and the more progressive-minded people, you know, like to listen. You know, so
Does it frustrate you, though? I mean, the lack of geography I mean, because this is like on the cover of Newsweek, CNN with Anderson Cooper. No one cares to mention there's a titty bar and a mosque already there in this controversy, in this argument.
Because it's a hot button topic. You know, honestly, my thought is I don't really care. Like, we live in America where you should be able to build and do anything you want, and whether that goes for building a mosque or being gay or whatever, like, live your life and let others live their life. And in all honesty, like, what is it? It's 2010. It's 2011. We're coming up on 10 years. Nothing has been rebuilt at Ground Zero. You know, we can't even build our own goddamn building back, you know?
It'll be like, ready by the time Obama runs for election, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It'll be ready then, that's for sure.
Well, hold on a second, we're sounding like teabaggers here. Well, are you frustrated with President Obama's sort of like situation with Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the way he wants to go things by the book? Because this is the way I see it. President Obama may not get reelected. So he has only one chance to give the world a taste of what it's like to have a military where anybody can serve openly.
Well, of course, he could very easily say that he wants to change it. What people don't realize is that he actually technically doesn't really have the power. He could put out a presidential order to make change the policy, but it still has to be voted by Congress. People don't realize they took away that power. They took away that power from Teddy Roosevelt a long, long time ago. So, you know, technically, Obama doesn't have the power to do it. He does need the support of the Congress, and the goddamn Senate is being hung up by assholes, and nothing is going through the Senate right now.
But the decision of the judge in Virginia, he could have just said, "We're not going to challenge it and let it stand, and that'll be the end of it," right? Or no?
Well, I think politically, though, you're missing out on it, because everybody will turn on him and say, look at him. He's going against what Congress has. So he's deferring to Congress. He's deferring to the people. Politically, it's smart for him.
Well, he said all along that he wanted to change the way Washington works, you know, and he doesn't want to be like George Bush, because if George Bush was president, or, you know, he would push things through regardless of what anybody thought, and we had a lot of horrible things that happened. So I think... you know, the problem is we live in a society of instant gratification, and people want it now, you know, without doing it the right way. And that's the we went through 8 years of, we're going to do it now, we're not going to ask questions, we're not going to do it right, we're just going to buy the house even though we don't really have the money, we're just going to go to war even though we don't really know why or who, we're just going to do this just because we want it now. And I think what Obama's trying to do is he's trying to change that way of thinking by saying, no, we're going to do this right. I understand you're frustrated, you know, and you know, he's trying to set people back on track to actually doing things the way we need to. We need to stop being so instant gratification. People want the instant answer without putting in the work.
Well, you know, one thing that's been really flooring me is this video that's being circulating online, pointing out that the word Al-Qaeda is a Western word, that Al-Qaeda as an organization doesn't technically exist. It is a Western word to describe terrorist individuals, but there's actually no collection of people organized under the name or under a flag or a banner, or there's a door, there's a sign anywhere that says Al-Qaeda. Like, Osama bin Laden and people who sympathize with him or terrorists don't call themselves Al-Qaeda. They don't think of themselves as an organization of criminals.
They think of themselves as jihadists.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because, you know, people have said, I enlisted and I went into war to fight Al-Qaeda. But in reality, Al-Qaeda doesn't really exist. And a lot of this bombing that happened in Afghanistan was literally the military chasing its own tail. Like, there was nobody in those mountains. They thought they had, like, on Fox News, all these, like, bunkers and very elaborate, like, computer. You know, it was like a scene from Superman 3. Did you ever see that movie?
With Richard Pryor?
With Richard Pryor, where they have the computer in the side of the mountain. That's what they thought Osama bin Laden had. And so they were blowing up basically mountains, you know, and like soldiers actually died in that invasion from friendly fire because they were shooting at each other and there was, like, hardly anybody there. It's heartbreaking and it's frustrating.
Well, we got sent into a war by people who had other intentions. So, you know, that weren't about solving the world's problems here. So,
instead of spending money on a war, I think we should spend it on girl groups.
Mm-hmm. And drag.
Like Zell. Tell us. I'm sorry, we got sidetracked. Tell us about Zell, your new girl group that you started with you and two real girls.
Yeah, well, it's actually pronounced XL.
XL, okay. XL, like Microsoft.
Yes, it is, and it's spelled X-E-L-L-E, which mm-hmm. L is French for girl. So there's a couple of plays here. It's like X-girl. It's also XL because all three of us are of the curvy type. And so we started this girl group. It's me and these two straight girls who have phenomenal voices. And the three of us are in the process of putting together an album it's really fun pop music, really danceable, kind of with a Euro pop edge. You know, we're trying to get back to that sort of melodic power melodies. You know, it's very, you know, how Lady Gaga sort of, I think certainly channeled into that, as opposed to getting away from the, you know, auto-tune talking thing, you know.
And did you premiere it at the Glammy Awards, the yeah. awards for gay New York City nightlife last night?
Yeah, last night we premiered one of the new songs we're working on last night at the Glammys, and it went the finale, and it just was amazing. The reception has been really great, and we have some really, really big things planned about that I can't tell you about yet. But I will call you guys back as soon as I can, because it's going to be really big. We're really excited. You know, I just got really frustrated because I felt like a lot of drag entertainers are putting out all these songs now. And all the songs are just about, like, I'm fierce, I'm getting in drag. And, you know, and that's cute for the club kids, uh-huh. you know, but the reality is that, well, if you're gonna try to compete with Lady Gaga, your songs have to be as good as hers because you're a man in a dress. So you're going to have to work twice as hard to get that far. Mm-hmm. So
you're like Condoleezza Rice. You have to be like the black lesbian in the White House, full of Republicans.
Well, you have to be first. Well, I have to tell you, I was so mad at Bibi Zaharia-Benet, who was the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race the first season, because she was going to come out with a single. I said, please promise me it's going to be your catchphrase, cook your face. And she's like, yes, it will be that. And then it came out.
She said it on this show.
And it wasn't that. I was like,
she lied to our faces in front of our program. Not the first time that's ever happened.
Mm-mm.
So what's your song? Now, is your song going to be, you could steal that, you know.
Cook your face, but you got to do it with like that African
Squatter's Rights.
Click sound. Your face. Your face.
Oh, that's awful. That is awful.
Squatter's Rights means if somebody's not using something, you can take it for yourself.
Well, and you know, I've been doing that for years.
I mean, RuPaul's not using, you know, you better work anymore. So somebody could do a song technically could do that. Yeah, you know.
So tell us about the Glammys last night. Who was there? What did they wear? Who looked fierce? Who lost? Who cried? What's the dirt?
Oh God. I have to tell you, I literally, because this dance number it was a huge number. It was me with seven dancers. And the two other girls in the group. I literally was in the basement drinking booze and getting everyone in makeup, because I'm the drag queen in the group. Mm-hmm. So I'm, of course, responsible for putting makeup on everybody. And it was crazy. It was packed. There was everybody in nightlife was there in New York, and they debuted Peppermint's new single. Her video was debuting there. Sahar Davenport debuted her new single.
Who was there in the audience? Like, because that usually brings out some interesting celebrities to it. Like Michael Musto, who nobody knows
Michael
about.
Michael Musto is always there. Mike Diamond from Pop Lab. Logo was there. Oh, yeah, they're always everywhere.
Whole television channel. Like, people from Logo, or what do you mean?
Of course people from Logo.
They were covering it for their channel.
Yeah, they were covering the event. Bianca Del Rio, Shaquita hosted it. Sherry Vine, Epiphany were there. All the queens from the Queens of Drag show on gay.com were there.
Who looked the fiercest?
Oh.
Who was the fiercest queen of them all, besides you?
Myself, obviously.
Besides you.
Oh, besides me. I have to give the props out to Bianca Del Rio.
Who was she wearing?
She was wearing herself, because she's a fierce little seamstress. And, I think she changed three or four times throughout the night. And she looked simply stunning. Everything was covered in the sequins, of course. And, she just looked flawless, and she always does. So,
Will you email it? Did you take any pictures? Will you email us some photos of it?
I will email you some photos. I didn't take any. I was too busy drinking. But I will email you some photos.
Mimi, you and I are going to get along just fine.
Just get me a bottle of vodka with a straw.
Lady Bunny. It's the Lady Bunny cocktail. Yeah. I heard rumors, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you one time got into a cab, and the cab driver turned to you and said, "Oh, you are Lady Bunny." And she...
It's true.
It was Lady Bunny, who likes to give cab drivers blowjobs in exchange for rides.
It may or may not be true.
Did he offer you oral sex?
Or was that Sherry Vine? Or was it Heckalina? Who was the drag queen that
it is a true story. And it was me and two other drag queens were in a cab. And he asked us if any of us were this drag queen. It's this drag queen in New York by the name of Regine.
Oh, it wasn't Lady Bunny. Darn.
Yeah, it wasn't Lady Bunny. I get people all the time ask me. I call us the Fat Five, and it's the five fat drag queens. And I always get asked if we're one of the other people. It's just this weird common thing. It's Gusty Winds, Sweetie, Lady Bunny, myself, Jackie B, and then the sixth one sometimes is Chi Chi LaRue. So
No,
she lost all that weight. And Jackie Beat, they both had the little, where they put that elastic band around your waist.
The gastric bypass thing,
zero.
But Chi Chi LaRue looks a lot, I have to say, it's like sometimes you want a little meat on the girl, It's like, Chi Chi LaRue.
Life is like a paycheck. A generous figure is always nice.
Well, the thing with Shishi, though, she had that, and then she had work done on her face, and when you get your face pulled, it's for the first year, it's pretty tight.
It's kind of Sarah Jessica Parker thing.
It has to kind of fall into place.
I have to be honest, I hate it when men get plastic surgery.
You do? You like them? GQ magazine and a lot of different fashionistas are now declaring the death of the twink, and it's the era of men again in fashion. And because of the success of that hunk on Mad Men.
Oh, yeah.
What's his? I don't know his name, but because I don't watch.
The lead actor, John Hamm.
Yeah. John who?
Hamm, I think, right?
John Hamm. Hambone. But also all those hunks on True Blood. And, so silver hair, wrinkles. Men over the age of 30, over the age of 40, are sex symbols now, and not the twink young ones.
Old age, God. Here I come.
Finally. I'm a sex symbol again. Yay. Oh, I mean, what do you think about that? It's like they're declaring the death of the twink.
Well, they're not dying because they're in my bed right now. But they're sewing. They're just sewing. It's my little sweatshop over here.
You're always going to have twinks in fashion, though, because who else is going to work for that pay scale and live in a house like with 20 other people living in one bedroom?
That's true.
I find older guys doing that.
Well, I mean, they're talking about runway models.
Oh.
You know, like what they're trying to put in magazines and sell to the consumer. Before it was like youth culture and college age culture, like Abercrombie and Fitch. And, you know, that sort of like, I'm a college athlete or I'm a skateboarder. Now they're trying to sell having a job, because it's such a rare thing for so many American men to have a job and a suit, that they're trying to sell them the idea of wearing a suit as a sexy thing and having silver hair and wrinkles.
Suits are sexy.
Suits are sexy, but I think it's of an interesting kind of flip-flop that's happened, you know?
I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing. I'm tired of these skinny twinks running around not eating anything. If they don't eat something soon, Angelina Jolie might adopt them. You know, it's like, put a little meat on your bones, eat a little, because here's the reality. When we all die, we're going to rot in the ground, all of us. And so these skinny motherfuckers who are running around with no meat on their bones, when they die and they rot in the ground, excuse me, there's nothing for the worms to eat. These skinny people are starving the worms of America. The worms are dying. I can't do it.
I heard rumors that our bodies don't decompose because we're full of so many preservatives. Is that true?
Well, they also, you're not going to decompose if they put you too far down into the ground and they put formaldehyde in you. So, yeah, you don't really decompose.
I just want to be taxidermied.
And stuffed and thrown in the corner. David Charpentier's apartment.
like a cocktail.
Bear.
Mm-hmm. A permanent cocktail in my hand and a microphone in the other.
Don't mind Mimi. She won't bite.
You were actually raised by she-wolves. Both of your moms are lesbian, right?
Yes.
Is that true?
I have two lesbian moms, yes.
And so have you heard about the lesbian moms that got kicked out of a mall? Or was it a couple?
It was a lesbian couple.
Oh, yeah. It was a lesbian couple. Mark, what happened?
Yeah.
So they were making out in a mall, and the security guard came over and told them they had to leave, that kind of behavior wasn't tolerable there. But I have to say, though, the people that own the mall, like, immediately called those women up and said, we are so sorry. That is not what we value, and that person has been, you know.
And then they gave them a $10 gift certificate for Chick-fil-A.
Yes. For
they actually got an all-you-can-eat pass to Panda Express and Pretzel Time.
So were your moms...
and they
So you were raised since, like, you were a little kid from lesbians, or did your mom come out
later? No, I got adopted.
Oh, so
I got adopted.
Angelina Jolie's your mom.
But, yes.
But like, you were adopted as an infant, or because did your lesbian mom send you to Christian Bible school?
No. When I came out to my family, I was actually disowned and I lived on the streets for a while.
Oh my God!
And I was adopted when I was 15 or 16.
Shit! I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for a dossier maker, Dave.
Well, David told me you had lesbian moms, but I didn't know the extent of what the story was. Are you in contact with your birth parents at all?
My dad a little bit. My mom I haven't talked to in probably 10 or 11 years.
Wow.
Well, I mean, your star's rising. Any chances are that you're going to reconcile with her?
I don't know. It would take a lot. It would take a lot. I mean, it's just, just given circumstances of things that have gone on. You know, I'm all for giving people second chances, but I do also believe that you have to work for it.
But have you stalked her on Facebook?
No.
Or do you think she stalked you, or do you?
I mean, is she aware of your career and your career choices and what you're doing?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I mean, I literally have not had any contact with her for 11 years.
Wow. What would you say to her if you do bump into each other? Would you even recognize her in public?
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course I would.
What would you say to her?
I have no idea. I had no idea this was going to be Oprah.
I'm curious.
To Chicago,
like,
but.
Well, you know, this is how we do it here in the Windy City, baby.
Yeah.
You were crying for a second. I thought it was real, but I want to hear the real deal. I mean, it's like, what would you really say to her? I mean, she might be listening to this. She might be stalking you, you know, or, you know, following you and feeling awful about what happened and not knowing how to approach you.
Oh, I don't even know. You know, sorry, I'm just laughing because I just don't even know what I would do. It just would be so awkward. You know, I know it's like so politically incorrect to say, but people tell us all the time that we should, you know, love our family unconditionally. And I think that, you know, parents have an obligation to love their children unconditionally. And when you as a parent start doing things that are destructive to yourself in at a time in any child's life when they're going through their own shit, you're just not being responsible, you know? And so, like, you're not doing your job. And you know what? So, like, maybe it doesn't have to be, you know, like, if you're not giving it, you know, I can't expect to give it back. Do you know what I mean?
Sadly, so many kids get kicked out of their house or leave home as a teenager. What were the circumstances like for you when you were kicked out? Was it after you came out to your parents?
What happened was my parents split. They were going through a divorce, and I'm the oldest of four children. And my mother left the picture and left me and my siblings with my father, who is a workaholic. I never really had a strong relationship with him growing up. It was always, I mean, he was in my life, but it was sort of, he was kind of emotionally distant in some ways. And I think it came from more of a place of he loved to work really hard, but yet he also just didn't really know how to be a father. The thing I've always said about my dad is that he didn't always do the right thing, but he always tried.
Okay.
To do something.
How did you
leave home?
Well, what happened was when my mom and my dad split, my younger brother, who and I notoriously do not get along, have never gotten along. Like, you know, like, and this is the same one that went to church and drag with me. You know, like, we are so yin and yang. You know, and it's just like blood and it's just like oil and water when we're together. And he became really violent to me after my mom was gone, who I guess was sort of like a referee figure. And, you know, it just became a really unhealthy situation emotionally and physically for me to be in. And I felt that I sort of, when my parents split up, that I had to become the adult in some ways. And my dad and I got a little bit distant. And I actually moved in with my aunt for a while just to get away from the situation so I could, like, really assess what was going on. Because sometimes when you're so close to something, you can't wrap your mind around it. So I moved in with my aunt, and what happened was, it was then that I, like, put everything together with one of my family, and I, like, the light bulb went off that, yes, I was gay, and, like, it was, like, a really clear, tangible picture for me, and I just sort of, came out of the closet to everybody at school, was hiding it from my family. I had never met another gay person in my life prior to this, so I just did not have any idea what, you know, life might be like. And I had a school bus driver who assaulted me and called me a faggot in front of the entire bus, like pushed me up against the seat. It was a really awkward, awful situation. And it led to my aunt finding out that I was gay. And over the course of 2 or 3 months, it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And then we went to go see the play Rent. And my aunt, like, I don't know what it was, something, like, snapped to my aunt that night, and, like, it got violent, and I found myself living on the streets the next day.
Oh, my God, you poor baby. How did you find this wonderful lesbian couple to take you in?
What happened was there's an organization, and this is in Portland, Maine, who called Outright, that unfortunately no longer exists. and they were sort of a support group and social group for LGBTQ youth and their allies in Maine. And one of the social workers there was basically trying every option to find me a place to live. Now, when you're 16, I'm 16 at this point, when you're 16, you are no longer considered as high a priority by many Department of Human Services because technically when you're 16, you're allowed to not live at home with your family. You're allowed to decide to not go to school. You're allowed to do all these things. You start to get some of the privileges of adulthood. And unfortunately, if you are 16 and you don't have any substance or abuse problems or any clear mental health issues, you're just not a priority. My only problem was really homophobia. Mm-hmm. And so I was just not, you know, I was not high on their list of people to take care of. So this gay youth organization basically had to take it on themselves. And, you know, it's hard. It's like, you know, when people want to adopt people, it's like, you know, 10 and 8 when you're still cute. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, well, who wants to take in a 16-year-old, you know, male? And, you know, eventually the light went off to call PFLAG. And called PFLAG, and the coordinator, like, got on the phone because the idea was, like, well, maybe there's somebody who's, like, has, like, come 360 with, you know, having a gay child who's, like, at college or something, you know, and could provide a place for me to stay. And because I was sleeping in shelters and, you know, sleeping on the streets and on park benches and, you know, couch surfing, and it was, like, really crazy and dangerous and wild. And I'm, like, trying to go to school, keep myself in school through all this, and it's really hard to do homework when you don't have a home, you know? So
you're trying to do homework, like, on a park bench?
Yeah, or wherever, you know, shelters and friends' houses. And, you know, it's like you just try. It was, like, the only tangible thing I could do that I had control over. So,
What's been your sort of opinion and response to this It Gets Better campaign? Had you seen a video online telling you that it gets better, would you have believed it as a teenager?
I think so. It was so weird because it was such, like, a different age. Like, the access to media the access to media that kids have now to, like, view these kinds of things. I mean, YouTube wasn't even around then, you know? So I think it's so important. Because I do know what it's like to be in that situation, and I think the worst thing that people feel is that they don't have any control over their lives. You know, like you have to go to school where you're tormented by people, and then you have to go home where you may or may not have parents who accept you and love you for who you are. You know, and you have to do what they say, and you just don't feel like you have any control or options in your life. You know, and so and that's what makes people feel that way. When you feel like you don't have any control, you don't feel like your life is yours anymore. And so you feel like what's the point? If you don't own your life, then there's no reason to exist.
What advice would you give to a young gay person, lesbian, transgendered, bisexual person who's listening to the show and
I think it's so important to believe. There's two things I have to say, and I think one of them is in some ways more important than the other. But the first is that, you know, I think it's so important for people out there who are feeling that they don't have control or hope or a reason to do anything to just know that, like, seriously, like, I have been there, and I've been there in the darkest, deepest places, and I know what it's like. I mean, like, literally, there were times when I was sleeping outside and I had to beg for food, or, you know, like, I'll say it, I'm not ashamed to admit it, but, like, I turned to sex in exchange for money because I didn't have food, you know? And I know lots of queer youth that did that, you know, whether they were, like, they would turn to sex or they would get into a relationship that wasn't really good to be in, but they did it because they had an older boyfriend who, like, would give them a place to stay. And as far as I'm concerned, that's just as much prostitution as getting a $20 bill at the end or whatever, you know? And so I know what it's like to have to do everything to try to survive emotionally and physically and you know, that to just hang in there, because, like, seriously, if I can get through it, you know, and, like, I feel so lucky to live my life and, you know, do entertain and to, like, you know, be, quote-unquote, a rising star or whatever, you know, and, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it, you know, and honestly, I'm, like, in some weird ways very thankful that it happened, because it made me, like, in all the awful things that happened and living outside, like, it totally opened up my door. I don't know that I would be living in New York City if my parents had never kicked me out of the house for being gay. Do you know what I mean? So there, I know that the silver lining isn't always apparent, but sometimes, you know, like when you forget that you have that $20 in your coat pocket and you find it the next winter, you know, like sometimes you don't find it right away. And there's always something better to come. But I think more importantly, because these are people who have more awareness of their lives and more power and control over their lives, but really where this comes down to me are the goddamn adults in the situation. Like, seriously, like, parents, go home and tell your kids you fucking love them. You know, like, that's what it's about. Like, sometimes it's all it needs to be. Like, you know, even kids who just, like, are not getting crap from their parents, who are getting crap at school, you know, like, sometimes they're just not feeling loved. And I know, like, we, you know, adults, it's easier because you're like, well, of course I love that person. But I think that as kids, we don't always know that, you know. We live in such a black and white world where there's not a lot of gray, and so everything gets kind of extreme, so...
And it means everything to a child when you take time out of your busy day and just turn around and say, you know, I think you're fantastic. I think you are so exciting and so wonderful to be around. And, you know, and I expect great things from you. And I look up to you and I think you're great. You know, that's what I do. Whenever I go to, like, colleges and lecture, I look into the young people's eyes and I say, get your eyes out of that Facebook and your text cell phones and look at me. And I say to them, it's like, you know, I'm excited to do what I do today because young people, for the most part, are very intelligent. They're very educated. They have all the world's resources at their fingers. They know so many more gay people. They're so much more gay friendly. All we need to do is wait for the old people to die. Those those John McCains of the world, the grouchy, mean old men with rakes on their lawns, they're going to drop dead soon enough. And then it'll be the era of drag queens.
Yeah.
Now, you've got a show coming up, too. You're a busy, busy girl. So you've got a show coming up called
Boylesque. I'm about to get on my airplane.
Yeah. Yes. So Boylesque, the burlesque movie parody, the car act. I can't wait for that movie.
Oh, my God. All right, so now, I've seen the original script for it. Because, all right, we should explain them what this is, first of all. Now, we all know that Cher and Christina Aguilera have powered the gay divas together to make
Showgirls,
the most fabulous
sequel.
Movie of all time, called Burlesque. Now, I'm going to anyone who's on the fence about deciding to go see it, I'm going to help you out right now. It's basically Showgirls that looks like Chicago with Christina Aguilera's world famous riff, set to the sounds of Candyman and Ain't No Other Man.
So is Christina Aguilera going to have impossible sex in a swimming pool? That's what I want to know.
I don't know that anyone could top Elizabeth Berkley's seizure-like performances as Nomi Malone in the greatest movie of all time, Showgirls.
Amen, sister. Amen.
Well, have you heard about in real life that Christina Aguilar is rumored to be bisexual and that she gets her bodyguard in bars and gay bars to go proposition women to bring them home and play with them?
Just like Crystal Connors in Showgirls.
Mm-hmm.
I'll buy her for you.
Let me tell you, without going too far off topic here, but one of my really good friends was an escort in Hollywood for years.
For having sex with
mm-hmm. celebrities.
This is a guy or a girl?
A guy.
Okay.
And I, it's just, you know, it's like Hollywood. Of course, I mean, like, we work in, you know, gay entertainment. You know, there's a lot of gay entertainers out there. And for me to believe that in Hollywood that all we have is that kid from Glee and Neil Patrick Harris, you know, like, really? You know,
give us names.
I want names. I want addresses, phone numbers. Were you or ever have you enjoyed the pleasure of a penis in your mouth?
My friend did have a really good threesome with two very famous Hollywood stars together.
Really?
You got to tell me.
Both men or women? One's a woman.
Both men.
Both men?
So it's three
guys.
Just
give us like their first names.
Yeah. Zachary?
Oh, no, it would give it away. It would give you their first names. Give me the first name.
Just give me the last name.
Let's just say that they might have worked on a movie together that rhymes with wood shill punting.
Oh,
girl!
those two actually paid an escort for sex.
I'm not talking about it anymore.
Why'd you bring it up?
That's enough. Listen, I'm glad you brought it up. Come on.
I always thought Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were having sex all along. It's like, you're not fooling anybody.
No, and they're around. And like, and if you're in New York or like L.A., I think in New York it's probably easier because they can like blend in a little bit. In L.A., everybody's looking for stars everywhere. But I've had encounters with two celebrities in New York since I've been here.
Sexual encounters?
Yes.
What?
What?
Mimi, kiss and tell.
I'll give you two hints, and that's all.
Oh, okay.
One was a star of a. I can't remember telling you guys this. One was a star of a teen coming of age movie franchise that's had several movies. And then the other...
I'm not getting it. Yeah. Okay. That's too vague. So a Lifetime movie, or...?
No. Like a well-known popular culture coming-of-age
The Wonder Years.
It was movies.
It was a series of movies.
Hmm.
And then the other one was a well-known TV personality who now has his own show, but prior to that was a regular featured contributor for an extremely well-known daytime talk show.
You were having sex with Nate Berkus?
No, he's gay. We all know he's gay.
Well, I know that. But
a contributor for Dr. Oz?
So what else do you guys want to talk about?
You did not have sex with Dr. Oz. I don't believe it.
What else do you want to talk about?
Is that why you do the Demented Dorothy? Is this revenge?
Oh, Lord. To get back to burlesque here.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're stretching the celebrity sex stories a bit.
Well, now, let's get back. Well, let's tell us what your take on it is, because I really like how you've done your version of Boylesque, the takeoff of the Christina Aguilera Cher movie. What's the plot of your show?
The plot of Boylesque, it's based on it's a parody of the script of the movie for Burlesque. We got an advanced copy, and we've parodied it, and we're going to be opening it the week before the movie does. It's the first time that a parody has opened before the source material. So as far as I'm concerned, the Christina Aguilera Cher movie is actually a parody of our Off-Broadway play. So it's okay. They can send me the royalty check. And but we're setting ours in the original. It takes place in a burlesque strip club in California. And we set ours in a gay bar in Akron, Ohio, that is run not by Tess, who is the character that Cher plays in the movie, but the gay bar is run by a Cher impersonator.
Whoa.
A good one or a bad one?
An awful Cher impersonator, like the world's worst Cher impersonator, and that's why the club is not doing well. The evil real estate developer, who we've given a new name in our version of Sonny, appropriately, mm-hmm. is trying to buy the club to turn it into a strip mall, and they don't have money to stop to pay their mortgage, and everything's going under. That is until a young boy by the name of Chris shows up with the dreams of becoming a world-famous drag star. But the thing is, he wants to sing live instead of lip-syncing. And, of course, finally, he does, and he gets the drag name of Christina, and he sings live. He has an amazing voice, and everybody comes to the club, and the day is saved, and Cher and Christina Aguilera run around. It's beautiful.
And it stars a very handsome, attractive actor from New York City.
Yes, myself.
Who will we find to play this role?
I'm playing the Cher character.
Oh, you are?
The bad Cher impersonator?
The really bad Cher impersonator. And she is always, the entire play, she wears the Turn Back Time outfit. And she makes everybody refer to her as Cher.
Mm.
It's very funny. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we've written in a character, a parody of a New York City drag queen. And the character's name is Spearmint Twizzler, a parody of Peppermint Gummy Bear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna be really fun. And we're really excited, and we're gonna be opening off Broadway the week before the movie does. So gonna be interesting.
And then right after that, you're taking off your Christmas tour. You're gonna stop here in Chicago, and where else are you going? You're going to Provincetown,
Mexican flea market of gay entertainment.
Yes. Yes. No. I'm going to be taking my Christmas show to Chicago and P-Town, Portland, Maine, New York. So on my off days when I don't have the Boylesque show, I'll be doing my my new Christmas show this year, which is called A Very Merry Christmas to You, Too.
I wanted more cuss work. Can I convince you to change the title now?
What do you want to change it to?
I like the one that you were saying. It's like, what was it, the one that was the last year's title?
The Dirty Diaper one, what was it?
No, what was it? You said
Merry
it was,
Shitty Christmas. What was it?
You had, what is it? You had a Merry Like a Virgin. There was
Merry Like a Virgin. A Very Merry Christmas. Oh, Holy Shit, It's Christmas.
Oh, Holy Shit, It's Christmas. That's what I want.
Well, we love that one.
I love
that title. But last year, when we toured the show last year, everyone was like, you can't use Oh, Holy Shit, It's Christmas.
Why not? So
it's hard to put on a marquee.
Well, it works in cities like New York and Chicago and San Francisco. But when you're going to, like, New Hope, Pennsylvania, where it was one of the cities that did the show last year, they I showed up at the venue, and they had the posters I had sent them, and they had put, like, XXX across it. And, like, made it sound like it was some dirty, dirty, dirty porn show.
So what if they think it's a dirty, dirty porn show? It's not like you're a stranger to that, darling.
Yeah.
We're all whores. We show them what they want. We cash the check.
Money, we cash the check.
And we take the tips.
Well, Mimi,
we show them what they want to see.
I'm super excited to see you do Demented Dorothy and the Seven Deadly Gay Sins at Haunted Halsted this October 24th, this Sunday, 2 p.m. You can get your tickets online at feastoffun.com/haunted or just visit hauntedhalsted.com. It all ends up at the same place.
It all goes to the same place, just like eating that chocolate ice cream and that turkey, that Chick-fil-A sandwich they gave to the lesbians for being kicked out of the mall. Or all you can eat. I wonder what they gave them, because, you know, when they're apologizing to a consumer, you want to get something out of it.
Yeah.
So I wonder what the lesbian couple asked
for. Maybe more
for.
Cats.
Like all
kitty litter boxes.
I think the all you can eat Panda Express is the
lesbians like tea cozies.
They got Crocs. They got Crocs and khakis.
Well, when you're in Chicago,
subsequently was the reason why they got kicked out, was for the Crocs and khakis. They didn't get kicked out for kissing, just for the fashion.
Okay, Mimi, when you're in Chicago, we'll go to an all-you-can-eat buffet together and hold hands.
Can we go to Cinnabon?
Sure.
Yes. We'll
Do you want to go to the trashy suburban malls while you're in town?
We don't have malls in New York City, so I love going to malls. I'm always like, I'm so fascinated by mall culture.
Mm-hmm. It's a young culture. It's like teen culture and gay culture and moms. It's moms, teens, and gays.
Well, my mom's going to be in town. She flew in just to meet you. She's a huge fan of yours.
I can't wait to meet her.
You'll have a good time.
Mimi, I'm first. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
It's a pleasure. And people can visit you on Twitter, right? Twitter.com/MimiImFirst.
And they can go to my website, too.
MimiImFirst.
which is MimiImFirst.com, and that's MimiImFurst.
I like your emphasis.
Emphasis.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you ever have a hard time spelling that to a phone operator? But you go by, you don't, you still kept your boy name, Braden Chapman, right? I mean, it's not like you have a credit card with Mimi on first.
No, I changed my boy name.
You did?
Yeah, my boy name is Hugo Second.
Okay.
But I mean, it'd be great. It'd be so awesome if you got a credit card as Mimi on first and then personalized
it. Well, it could be Mimi on first Inc. or something.
No, just Mimi on first. I never
leave
home without
it. The hardest working bitch in show business.
Mimi, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mimi.
We love you.
We
look forward to seeing you.
Thank you. I can't wait to see you guys next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Or this week, rather.
Yes, this week.
In a couple days.
This week. I don't even know where I am anymore. I'm on my private jet, Air Force One, Googling myself. I don't even know where I am anymore.
Air Force One.
Well, when you're done Googling yourself, make sure to wipe.
Thank you,
Mimi. Bye. Mimi I'm First lives in New York City. Of course, you can check her out at MimiImFirst.com. And here in Chicago,
you can see her as part of Haunted Halstead, a haunted house-style pub crawl through Boys Town. It starts at 2 p.m. on October 24th. Meet at Berlin, and then we're taking the party to Halstead Street.
It's going to be fabulous.
It is going to be fun. And Foster's mom is going to be there.
Yeah, I'm not just kidding.
No, huh?
It is fantastic to hear that interesting story about Mimi on First and her tumultuous teenage years.
Yeah, and sadly, it's a story we've heard many times in the GLBT community, but you know, you rise above it.
Honey, sometimes all you need to do is hold on to some good music, and things are going to be all right. Like this song, "Be All Right" by Christine W. from her album Power of Music. It's available on our website, feastoffun.com. Give it to a friend you like. You can buy it as a gift. Mm-hmm. You know, why wait till Christmas or Hanukkah or Tet when you can give a Halloween present of a fabulous song to a friend? Say, Fausta Shancha. I'm Fausta Furnos.
I'm Mark Killian.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Say it over and over, say yeah, it's gonna be alright. Look over your shoulder, say yeah, it's gonna be alright. I know, say yeah, it's gonna be alright. I say you know it's gonna be alright this time. I feel you here, just like yesterday. We threw all cares away, I hold on to the time. We were laughing and planning and saying we hope it would stay just that way. Safe in the arms of the ones that we love and the stars from above. But these hard times, they bring us to our knees, and the rain beats down on us in blind faith. You know we say, hey, it's gonna be alright. See over and over, say yeah, it's gonna be alright. Look over your shoulder, say yeah, it's gonna be alright. I know, but say yeah, it's gonna be alright. I say you know it's gonna be alright this time. And there's no way out, baby. No way out. Hey, I'm wading through a river of a million tears. Take my hand. Help me out. Take my hand. The river's rising, I can't get to you. Hey, yeah, take my hand. You said you'd pull me out. Hey, it's gonna be alright. Hey, it's gonna be awesome.